You're listening to the Wise Investor Radio Network, featuring the Wise Investor Show. For nearly two decades, the Wise Investor Show has helped you better understand the markets, analyze stocks and bonds, and help you become better investors. During that 20-year span, the hosts of the Wise Investor Show have been managing their money and their clients' money using a conservative, value-oriented style. Now, here's your host, Simon Hamilton.
Napoleon's definition of military success was the man who can do the average thing when everyone around him is losing his mind. Can't the same be said with investing? Success is usually not about the sporadic home run. It's having a repeatable process and, quite frankly, not doing anything stupid. This is the greatest hallmark of long-term players in the markets and why good financial advisors exist, to keep clients on the rails during stressful times when there's so much noise around us. Up next, let's talk about some unfortunate investing traits and evidence all over the place right now and what the market might actually be king off of as stocks trade at all-time highs. Good morning. Welcome on board another edition of the Wise Investor Show. Nothing says romance and how much I love you, like flipping on the radio to listen to me yap about the market and investing. But nonetheless, happy Valentine's Day. Happy President's Day, everyone. I'm certainly cheaper than a dozen red roses and a box of chocolates for sure. That I can promise you. So as stocks lost their heads over GameStop trades, you heard me talk about that symbol GME, which by the way was over 400 bucks when I hosted the show 2 weeks ago. Now is, I think, below 50. I'm reminded of our greatest value add as financial advisors, helping our clients stay grounded, focused, disciplined. Whether this entails helping people not panic in the 30% decline last spring, cautioning against voting in your portfolios like you voted on your ballots, and conflating political leanings with investment positioning, or just trying to get people to understand what the market actually cares about, filtering out the noise. So I want to touch on this briefly. What are, as I heard it put this week, some unfortunate investing traits? Also, guess what's an under-the-radar tailwind right now? Good old-fashioned corporate fundamentals. There's so much else to read about that actual fourth quarter earnings reporting season hasn't been talked about as much, despite the fact that they've generally been much stronger than anticipated. So we'll get into that, have a few observations there. Also want to make sure I drill down into some specific company earnings reports. Spent a little bit more time on the big picture in recent shows, and again, want to make sure I allocate some time to discuss individual stories, because that's where 90% of our research time is spent, understanding businesses and how much to pay for those businesses. Remember, if you miss anything, the archives will be posted to our website pretty much as soon as I'm done this morning at our website. That's thewiseinvestorgroup.com. It's also where you can listen to our midweek podcast. My colleague Dave Mount did a great job hosting this week. And if you're not a client, maybe something I say resonates with you. Maybe you're an individual investor, do-it-yourselfer, feeling a little bit adrift in all this volatility and uncertainty. Or maybe you are working with an advisor, but you're getting sort of pat advice. Boilerplate, robotic advice. It's not customized. It's not tailored. Contact us through the site. We'd like to love to speak with you about what we do for folks on a daily basis. So I referenced the craziness of these sort of trader mobs, if you will, united on social media platforms and bidding up stocks in an attempt to make some fast money. GameStop was sort of the poster child of that. This week it was the cannabis stocks that shot up dramatically, only to crash and burn really a day or two later. Eventually, water seeks its own level. These stocks will trade where they're supposed to trade, based on real fundamentals and future prospects for those fundamentals. But on a day-to-day basis, all bets are off. Anything can happen. Saw a few stats I just wanted to share from you, or share with you, I should say, from Ritzold Asset Management up in New York. I thought they were really interesting. They quoted a study of Brazilian futures traders that found 97% of individuals who traded in the market for more than 300 days lost money on those trades. There was another study of day traders in Taiwan over a 15-year period from 1992 to 2006, showed that even the most experienced day traders lose money, and surprisingly, even those traders who lose consistently continue to trade despite their losses. I think more recently it was the SEC that studied currency traders and discovered approximately 70% of customers lose money every quarter, and on average, 100% of a retail customer's investment in currency trading is lost in less than 12 months. I don't have the exact study, so, you know, I'm sort of summarizing here, but I think you get the point. Day trading is really hard, and for every guy you read about in the paper that made $1 million in the last, you know, few months, God knows, maybe there's 100 that lost their shirts. You know, you hear these radio ads. In fact, I heard one coming in today, usually from insurance people or people peddling gold, talking about the stock market casino. The stock market's the opposite of a casino. Guess what happens in a casino? The longer you're there, the more the likelihood is that you lose money. Why do you think if you go to a Vegas casino like I have, they offer you comps? They do everything they can to get you coming back, to get you to stay, to come back next year. Why? Because they know the longer you sit at the table, more likelihood the house is going to win. Stock market's the exact opposite. Over short periods of time, days, weeks, months, anything can happen. It's a coin flip. But the odds of success go up dramatically the longer you're involved. To the extent, if you go through the last 100 years of U.S. history, the stock market basically has had a 100% success rate over 20 and 30-year periods, and something like over a 90% success rate over 10-year periods. Obviously, the past is no guarantee of the future, but I think you get what I'm saying. With that in mind, read a really good piece this week, and I want to give him full credit, from Morgan Housel. He's a financial writer I've quoted numerous times over the years on this show. Guy really knows his stuff. Titled, Unfortunate Investing Traits. And he quotes Napoleon. That was where I got the quote from at the top, and basically saying that, you know, most wars are lost rather than they're won. The final outcome is driven more by one side's blunder than the other's brilliance, meaning that you don't necessarily have to be a genius to be a good investor. We all read in the paper about the brilliant move, the guy who got in on stock XYZ 15 years ago. But you know what? You don't have to do that. It's about not making big mistakes, making unforced errors, panicking at the wrong time. So I wanted to just share with you a few observations that Housel had that I tend to agree with, and I've talked about on the show before. Some consistent traits of investors that are unsuccessful. And I say this because it's always good to look in the mirror sometimes. Say, hey, listen, am I doing everything right? What am I doing wrong? One that he talks about is personalizing wins and externalizing losses. You know, there's some businesses that you can be in, right? Let's say as Housel says, let's say you're writing a piece of computer code. If it works, you can take credit for it. If it doesn't, you blame yourself, right? It works because you did the right thing. If it doesn't work, it's because you did the wrong thing. It's very binary. Stock market, much different than that. So many forces collide at once. Politics, business, markets, psychology, economics, of course. And one of the narratives of unsuccessful investors is that the wins are caused by your decisions. The losses are the consequence of some external force. Maybe it's who the president is or some policy. Very easy to take personal credit for what works, claim to be a victim of what doesn't. But here's the deal. There is no certainty in investing. We all know that, but sometimes we forget it. The best we can do is to put the odds of success in our favor. And what I would say to you is it's possible to make good decisions that don't work and bad decisions that work beautifully. Happens all the time, as well as random decisions that can go either way. I mean, we all know the guy that put all his money in, you know, Apple, symbol AAPL, you know, trading, you know, $135 a share, up 87% last year, up 90% the year before. We all know the guy has all his portfolio in there, right? Or the guy who bought all some tech stock during the COVID shutdown that went up, you know, a few 100%. That's a bad decision, right? We all know you don't put all your money in one or two stocks, let alone an aggressive stock. Sometimes it works out. Meanwhile, you can be a diversified investor, do the right things. You had some international stocks, you had some value stocks, you had some small cap stocks, you had some commodities. You've underperformed the S&P undoubtedly over the last 10, 12 years because one asset class has been the best place to be. So one of the biggest mistakes you can make, again, is to confuse a bull market in certain asset classes with brilliance, particularly if you have a lot of exposure to that. The successful investors realize that there'll be periods of success that they had nothing to do with, or they can admit that a long period of loss was due to their own mistake. Okay, don't forget that. Next point that Housel makes is an ignorance of what he calls normal disasters. The markets never crashed. They wouldn't be risky. If they weren't risky, they'd get too expensive because all the potential returns would be wrung out. That's what investing is all about. Huge market declines that are characterized in the media as shocking, unexpected, surprising. They're not surprising or shocking at all. You should know that that's the price of admission. The timing isn't predictable. Okay? You don't know when the market's going to crash. I mean, who knew that the market was going to pull back 30% last spring? Not too many people. But the occurrence itself is inevitable. If you get caught in a period where you lose a third of your money and it stays that way for a year or two, that's not a 100-year storm. That's something that we've experienced on average about every 8 to 10 years, going back 100 in U.S. history. It's part of the deal. It's part of the business. Housel uses the whitewater rafting metaphor. Investing's like whitewater rafting. You're going to get wet and tossed around with a decent chance of a minor injury, a rare chance of a major injury. That's what investing is. Crashes are rare events, you know, every eight to 10 years, but they are inevitable at some point if you're a consistent whitewater rafter. How about assuming experience in a past era provides valuable insight into this era? That comes up all the time. Many investing observations are specific to a certain era. The more granular the observation, the more specific it is to that period of time. And the less likely it is it's going to be repeated. Certain things are repeatable. Investor psychology being the main one. Investors have had the same reaction to greed and fear since the dawn of time. But there are a lot of prominent investors and economists who have gotten things wrong because they think that firsthand experience in one era automatically makes you that much more knowledgeable in a future era. Take inflation, for example. The precise mix of everything that was going on in the 1970s, geopolitics, manufacturing capacity, unions, technology, that led to inflation being in the double digits back then, will probably never exist again. Doesn't mean that you're not going to have inflation. It just means the next round of high inflation will be different from what caused the last round. Same thing with recessions. The symptoms, if you will, that fed the dot-com crash were different from the financial crisis, were certainly different from the COVID crash last spring. So assuming that you can predict one environment does not necessarily mean you're going to be accurate in the next environment. Only realizing where the boundaries of your risk tolerance are by going past them, a major mistake that a lot of individual investors are making right now. Up next, I want to elaborate on that point. Stick with me.
You're listening to The Wise Investor Show. To talk to your host or anyone from The Wise Investor Group, call 866-758-9473 and resolve to become a better informed, wise investor.
This is Simon Hamilton, co-host of The Wise Investor Show, heard every Sunday morning at 9 right here on WMAL. At The Wise Investor Group, we provide investment and financial planning advice for all areas of your life, family, retirement, estate planning, and charitable giving. Plus, we coordinate with your tax and legal advisors to ensure you have a cohesive, comprehensive financial plan that makes the most sense for you. Our commitment to integrity, transparency, and teamwork ensures you'll always get informed, candid advice.
This is The Wise Investor Show on The Wise Investor Network.
Welcome back to The Wise Investor Show. Simon Hamilton here, Managing Director at The Wise Investor Group at Baird. I've been talking about unfortunate investing traits. And I'm drawing heavily from an article I read this week from Morgan Housel, the esteemed financial writer who I quote all the time. And I bring this up because, like I said at the top of the show, more wars are lost than they are won. Successful investing over the long term is not about hitting home runs, although it would be nice once in a while. It's more about not doing anything stupid, avoiding unforced errors. I've been talking about that a bit, how a lot of people only realize where the boundaries of their risk tolerance are by going past them. Daniel Kahneman, who is a famous market strategist, he has said before that the key to investing is having, quote, a well-calibrated sense of your future regret. Most people don't have a good sense of that. They only know where those boundaries are after they've already lost money. I say this right now because really go back and think about how you were looking at the world last spring, last March, when the market went down 30% in what, 22, 23 days. Obviously, nobody liked that. I didn't like that either. My portfolio went down, of course. But if you were sitting there and you literally couldn't sleep, you had major concerns, you wanted to sell everything out at the bottom. Well, you have an opportunity now to fix it going forward, right? Because chances are you've recovered off those lows. You might even be profitable, from where you were before COVID even hit. Okay. You have a chance to recalibrate. Now is the time to take a look at your portfolio and say, listen, I'm at up whatever. I'm 90% stocks. There's no way if we get another correction like that, that, you know, I want to go through that again. Now is the time to rebalance. Time to rebalance is when things are good, not in the midst of a panic. Okay. The last thing that Housel points to is a tendency to be influenced by the actions of other people who are playing a different financial game than you are. Could that be any more true than what we're seeing today? How many people, and again, fortunately not a lot of our clients, I've had very few calls on this, okay, but I'm sure you know people who are being heavily influenced by what's going on with GameStop or what happened with the cannabis stocks this week. Some of these cannabis stocks went up, I mean, literally doubled and tripled in 1 or 2 days this week. Now, granted, a lot of them came right back down again, but somebody there made a lot of money, right? I think probably more people lost than gained, but somebody there made a lot of money. Those people are playing a different game. Now, that's an extreme example, but I would say a lot of these institutional investors are playing a different game. A lot of them are run by mathematical algorithms. A lot of the quote-unquote people running these hedge funds now, or at least, you know, are in the back room of these hedge funds, they're not investment people. They hardly know the names of the stocks that they're in and out of. It's purely based on math. They might be trading to catch a quarter of a point, an eighth of a point, a 64th of a point. Literally, when you're trading in that type of volume, that's what we're talking about. Secondly, one of the big advantages that you have over institutions is you don't have to be beholden to quarterly performance. If you're an institutional investor, or you're managing funds for an institutional investor. Okay, guess what? You're sitting in front of a board every quarter. You have to show what you own. You have to own the right stocks. You have to benchmark your performance to the S&P or the Dow or whatever you're benchmarking to. And be, you know, judged on that. Guess what? That turns you into a momentum investor because you're not going to buy something or own something that, you know, might have a payoff 3-4 years down the road. It's one of the reasons why growth investing has done better than value investing in the last few years. If you're an individual investor, you have no such pressure. The only thing that matters is your financial plan. Hopefully you've done a financial plan where you have a good idea of what your portfolio has to accomplish relative to inflation over an extended period of time. Okay? So you can afford, for example, to own a Citigroup, which is now, you know, symbol C, of course, trading at $62 a share. That was mired at in the 30s before the election. Okay? Financials have been out of favor for several years. You can afford to hold on to financials knowing and believing in your heart that it's one of the cheapest sectors in the S&P 500 and where the risk is likely skewed to the upside in the coming years. Much harder to do that if you're watching other people's money, if you're chasing what's hot. So again, I don't want to belabor the point. Morgan Housel doesn't have all the answers. I certainly don't have all the answers. But like I said, sometimes it's good to look in the mirror and understand what are unsuccessful investing traits. What are the errors that you can make? And then make sure you're on the right track. Up next, I want to go from the general to the specific. I want to talk a little bit about the overall earnings environment. And then as promised, drill down into some individual business stories from some of our top holdings. You won't want to miss it. Back in a minute.
You're listening to The Wise Investor Show. For sound advice about your personal financial situation, call 866-758-WISE or online at thewiseinvestorgroup.com.
Hi, this is Chase Hinderstein, co-host of The Wise Investor Show on WMAL. In these difficult times, you're concerned about your personal health, the safety of your family, and managing your daily life. Our goal is to help you filter out the noise and focus on what really matters about investing and what could impact your financial interests the most. We are committed to keeping you informed with real, plain talk. You can find updates, including timely commentary from our market experts at thewiseinvestorgroup.com.
Giving you the best investor advice for over 20 years. The Wise Investor Show, right here on the Wise Investor Network.
Welcome back to the Wise Investor Show. Simon Hamilton here, Managing Director at the Wise Investor Group at Baird. Been covering a lot of good ground so far. Been talking about unfortunate investing traits, with the premise being that it's not about being a genius. You don't have to hit consistent home runs to be a great investor. You just have to not do anything stupid. You have to avoid as many unforced errors as you can. So we talked about that. If you missed anything, please go to our website. That's thewiseinvestorgroup.com, where you can access the archives. Also listen to our midweek podcast that we host every Wednesday. And if you're not a client and something I've said today resonates with you, you want to find out more about what we do on our in our day jobs, financial planning and managing money for folks, you can contact us through the site. By the way, I just want to congratulate briefly my colleagues, Greg Smith, Chris Aim, and Ann Summerson, all three of whom were named this week to Forbes' state-by-state top advisors list for 2021. Obviously, our state is Virginia. All three of them made it. Greg was in the top five, as he usually is. So congrats to them and the great job that they do for us here at the Wise Investor Group. It's a credit to them and a credit to what they do every day for folks. So make sure you pat them on the back if you happen to know them. Listen, I want to transition a little bit. Talk a little bit about earnings. You know, every day I have a conversation that goes something like this. Simon, I had no idea why the market's going up. Seems ridiculous in light of insert issue. Usually it's one of two issues, something political, like at this juncture how Biden's going to destroy the economy, or something that maybe fails to appreciate the forward-looking nature of the market, such as a reference to the lousy state of the economy. I'm not making fun of anyone, okay? I'm not belittling. I'm just echoing what I continue to say month after month, year after year, that it's very important to figure out what you think the market cares about versus what it actually cares about, and to realize that the market's already discounted the present tough conditions months ago. Stock prices are looking months and in some cases years beyond the current realities. And as I've said multiple times, presidential policies and politics have much less to do with market outcomes than most people think. I mean, just look at the last 12 years. Market went up under Obama. Market went up under Trump. Market's going up under Biden. Other forces are driving the market. Maybe earnings resilience is a bigger reason than credited for. It's not just that there's no credible alternative for returns than stocks, or that we're awash in all kinds of Fed and government-provided liquidity. Companies are navigating this environment better than people expected. S&P 500 earnings are surprising to the upside, as I said at the top of the show. Here we are, 80% of earnings reports, fourth quarter earnings reports, are better than analysts' expectations. And if you look at the quote-unquote surprise ratio, the percent above estimates, it's been greater than 17%. So analysts have been slow to revise estimates higher, and companies have been able to leap over conservative bars. Don't want to get too much into an exhaustive earnings analysis here, but wanted to make a few observations, highlighting that improving corporate fundamentals are the teeth to this rally, even though they're often not reported as such. And they're probably the key variable to watch going forward, maybe more so than any policies from the new administration, or even what could transpire on the interest rate or inflation front. You know, multiples are already stretched. We already know that, valuation multiples. So for the market to keep going, it's going to come down to earnings to either justify the current multiples or even allow stock prices to continue to move up, you know, beyond where they were. So just, again, a couple observations. One thing that's very impressive, if you look at all the sub-industry groups in the S&P 500, okay, the median is flat year over year. That's pretty impressive. So here we've had a major economic downturn, negative GDP, right? And the median sub-industry year-over-year earnings are flat. It's even more impressive considering that the second half of 2019 was the previous sort of cycle peak. Remember, the market did pretty well during the back half of 2018 and 2019. Okay. Back half of 2018 and 19. So that's really impressive earnings resilience. And if past is prologue, Now, there's a way to go. Recent profit cycles have evidenced near universal positive participation. So if you look at 2008, 2009, coming out of the great financial crisis, I should say, early 2009 into 2010, almost 93% of companies in the S&P 500 had positive earnings revisions. If you look at 2004, 2005, it was 98%. 2019, almost 94%. So you've had almost all companies in the S&P 500 in gear in those economic peak periods. Right now, we're only about 50%. Only about 50% of companies in the S&P have seen earnings revisions. So there's a long way to go here. So even though overall resiliency has been good, I would say we're still in the early innings of it. The consensus for this year, 2021, is pegged just above 2019 levels. So if this year plays out as analysts expect, and we're already on track for that, if evidenced by the fourth quarter earnings of last year, we're already, on track to be above the previous cycle peak. And that fuels a lot of optimism, I think, about the earnings growth that we should see in 2022. So just to put some numbers to it, consensus estimates are calling for this year's earnings to be about 17% over last year's earnings, and 2022 operating earnings another 13% versus 2021. Okay, so again, I just bring this up because if you're sitting there saying this market's smoke and crack, it's just about the Fed pumping money, it's just about, speculation. No. Market's looking at double digit earnings growth both this year over last and 2022 over 2021. Doesn't mean it's going to happen. These are just consensus estimates. But that's why the market's doing what it's doing. And if you look at some of the other variables, like inflation, for example, if we do start to see some higher inflation, which we're just starting to see, and again, some inflation is a good thing, okay, gives corporations pricing power. That traditionally has been an important factor in corporate profit growth. When you see, again, I'm not going to break it out all today, but when you see modest upticks in inflation since 1950, that has generally been highly correlated with rising analyst estimates on earnings. Okay? And again, for obvious reasons, companies have more pricing power, right? The other thing that I would just reference is, companies buying back their own stock traditionally is a big tailwind for earnings growth as well. Again, for mathematical reasons. When you shrink the share count, there's more earnings per share. In 2020, last year, buybacks were at their lowest level since 2013. This year, you're likely to see a big uptick in that. Okay, so I think that'll be a pretty consistent tailwind. Of course, there are all kinds of risks. As our friends at Strategus point out, the economic and market research group down in D.C., often coming out of downturns, analysts tend to get revenue growth right, but tend to be off with respect to margins. It's much tougher to predict what operating leverage is going to provide. So that gives you a wide range of potential earnings growth outputs. Okay. So, take all these predictions and forecasts with a grain of salt. And the other thing is, as it stands, only healthcare, utility, and consumer staples sectors have been able to see their revenues punch above where they were in 2019. Okay. So you still have a pretty healthy slice of the S&P 500, not back to 2019 levels. But so again, there are certainly reasons to be cautious. I'm not trying to be overly optimistic here. There's certainly a lot that can go wrong. But if you're again suggesting that the fundamentals don't support the market, think again. That's an incorrect conclusion, in my opinion. So with that in mind, wanted to drill down on some individual companies because at the end of the day, we talk about the macro environment and we talk about economics. We talk about politics. But at the Wise Investor Group, we spend the vast majority of our time trying to understand individual businesses and what to pay for those businesses. I'll mention Disney, simple D-I-S. You all know Disney, trading around $193 a share. Big story on Disney is we all know that their on-site business is largely shuttered, right? Parks, movie theaters, cruises, we all know that business has suffered significantly during COVID. But guess what? The stock's at an all-time high. Why is that? Because their Disney Plus streaming service, the subscription numbers have gone through the roof. They're already surpassing where they originally thought a year ago that they'd be in 2024. Okay. And not just that, the losses that are associated with rolling out Disney Plus, which are substantial. It's expensive to roll out streaming. This quarter, the recent quarter that they just reported this week, I should say, those losses were much less than forecasts. And the overall, earnings for Disney were actually slightly profitable. Analysts were expecting a loss. So here you have a company that is way ahead of initial projections, both from internal projections and analyst projections, way ahead where they thought they would be. Okay. But they're also seeing better resiliency on their on-site businesses. So the idea is that when we finally get on the other side of COVID, Disney is going to be in a great position because they'll have sort of everything working at the same time. We always knew that Disney had the best media content in the world. That's never really been disputed all that much. The question is, how can they deliver that in a consistent way? I think this actually re-rates the multiple of Disney higher because they're now proving that they can execute well in a variety of different economic conditions. There's no way that people are going to consider Disney as economically sensitive as maybe they did a couple years ago because they have that streaming platform that's going to be successful even if people have to stay at home or even if people don't have the money to go to theme parks and cruises. The monthly subscription for Disney Plus is, I think, $7 or $8 a month. That's palatable for the majority of households in the United States. And if you look past COVID, when you look at their sort of traditional earnings power, and if you look at conservative valuation of their streaming business, based on peer, on what their peers are fetching in the market, Disney's still reasonable here at $192, $193 a share. Not sure I'd chase it because the stock has had a good run so far this year. Any pullback in Disney, I would look to add if you don't already own it. I think it's a core holding going forward. Another name I've been really excited about and happy with is one of our latest additions to the portfolio. That's Laboratory Corporation of America, commonly known as LabCorp. I'm sure you know LabCorp. You've probably had blood work sent out to them for analysis. The interesting thing about LabCorp is, COVID's been a mixed blessing for them, if I could put it that way. Obviously, they're handling a lot of COVID tests, and they're making some money on that. However, a lot of their core business has been slow. Why? Because, people aren't going to their regular physicals, their regular annuals, right? I mean, if they're going to the doctor, it's maybe for a COVID test. They've deferred a lot of the regular maintenance. But what's interesting is if you look at their most recent numbers that came out this week, they blew away estimates and they raised their guidance going forward. And what they basically showed is their core business is on track to be better coming out of COVID than it was going into COVID. So they really didn't lose any traction at all, much less than what some of the more conservative analysts feared. Secondly, they have secular tailwinds. Okay, you're seeing hospitals, doctors' offices, due to cost cutting, move away from doing their own analysis of blood and urine and other diagnostic tests. Big outsourcing trend. Okay, that benefits LabCorp. And for the second consecutive quarter, their results materially outperform their closest peer. So they're really starting to establish some distance between them and their competitors. I'll also just mention that LabCorp has a business that they acquired from Covance a couple years ago, and that's their whole clinical support of drug trial business, where they actually work with a pharmaceutical company to handle their drug studies. They do the patient recruitment, they do the testing, the analysis, and all that. That business had been soft. If you look at their recent earnings, their revenue growth was up almost 8% year over year. That's a business that actually has been a drag on their operating performance, could really start to accelerate as we come out of COVID, where drug companies go back to their sort of regular R&D work. COVID obviously took up the lion's share of lab space over the last 12 months. So LabCorp is still reasonable, less than 16 times earnings. It's not an expensive stock. Again, it's another one that's had sort of a run recently, but I would really look at LabCorp as a potential core holding, really, in the healthcare space. Okay, so take a look at LabCorp, again, the symbol LH, currently trading around $236 a share. Up next, stick with me. I'm going to have a few more minutes to squeeze in a couple more names. Back in a minute.
You're listening to The Wise Investor Show. To talk to your host or anyone from The Wise Investor Group, call 866-758-0000. 9473 and resolve to become a better informed, wise investor.
Hi, I'm Simon Hamilton, co-host of The Wise Investor Show, heard every Sunday morning at 9 right here on WMAL. For decades now, our people and expertise have made a difference in the financial lives of the people and communities we serve. That's because we combine diverse backgrounds and complementary perspectives to meet your specialized needs. Experience a different kind of financial partnership with The Wise Investor Group.
To reach Simon, call 866-758-9473 or log on to thewiseinvestorgroup.com and resolve to become a better informed, wise investor.
Waking you up wiser. This is the Wise Investor Show on the Wise Investor Network.
Welcome back to the Wise Investor Show. Simon Hamilton here, Managing Director at the Wise Investor Group at Baird. Remember, if you missed anything this morning, I think we've covered a lot of good ground. Go to our website. That's thewiseinvestorgroup.com, where we post the archives, also where we host our midweek podcasts. Different content, different material. You definitely want to check that out. And if you're not a client, you want to reach out to us, find out what we do for folks on a daily basis, you can contact us through the site. Just want to squeeze in another name or two, Generac Holdings, symbol GNRC. They reported their earnings this week as well. Probably the growthiest name in our portfolio. Not a cheap stock, you know, trading at, you know, roughly 40 times earnings. But I still think they're a value. I really do. You might know them. They're the largest player in the residential standby generator market with about somewhere between 75 and 80% market share. Blew away their earnings estimates and, more importantly, significantly raised their guidance. They forecast revenue growth this year, 2021, in the 25 to 30% range year over year. I mean, that's unbelievable. Now, granted, their business is skewed slightly higher, I think because of COVID, because more people are staying home, more people investing in their houses. You may not see as much generator ad over the course of the next 12 months. Maybe 2022 is a bit of a soft patch, potentially. However, the long-term secular drivers for this company are significant. And there, some of them are kind of obvious. You have an aging power grid. We all know that. You have consistent power outages, certainly in California, where they do a lot of business, but all over the country. Global warming has brought more natural disasters. These are all tailwinds for people wanting to have, backup power in their homes. Maybe even more importantly, they've become an alternative energy play. They've made a series of acquisitions over the course of the last few years involving alternative battery storage, clean energy storage solutions, allowing households to, monitor and not only save energy, but to buy it at, monitor the market and be able to buy at certain, low prices. Okay. But also be more efficient with their energy usage. And again, we're talking clean energy. One of their core competencies is natural gas, storage and, power generation. Okay. So Generac is hitting a lot of key markets that are likely to be addressed by the Biden administration. And they're showing up in a lot of those alternative energy portfolios, those socially conscious portfolios that you read about and maybe have participated in. Generac Holdings, I think, is just scratching the surface of where they could be 5-10 years from now. So again, I don't know if I chase the stock here, symbol GNRC trading around 315. They've had a good run. Maybe you look to see if they back off a bit on any pullback, on any market correction. But it's the type of stock that, I think has wonderful long-term potential. The other one I just wanted to mention briefly is Constellation Brands, symbol STZ. I'm sure you know Constellation, one of the largest wine and beer importers in the United States. I am getting much more bullish on the Corona story. I liked them during COVID because only about 15% of their business was on-site, bars and restaurants. So they still had pretty good traction from people just buying beer and wine for home use. But their brands are really doing well. Corona is a trusted brand, had some of the best fundamentals of any beer brand. They're putting a lot of marketing muscle into Modelo. You've probably seen commercials. That is probably the next big brand for them. Their seltzer business has exploded. They now have a top three seltzer product, and you're seeing a lot of bundled sales where people are buying Corona and Corona seltzer together. And they spun off to Gallo some of their least profitable and, least or most capital intensive wine brands. They've reduced their wine footprint down to their highest margin products less than 15 brands at this point. And they're still trading at about a 7% discount to the market versus a historical premium over the last 5 years. So the stock is still reasonable. Constellation really starting to get some traction here. Symbol STZ trading around $230 a share. Okay? Hope that was helpful, folks. Enjoy the rest of your holiday weekend. Until next time, stay safe, and I wish you wise investing. Baird makes a market in the shares of Laboratory Corporation of America, Generac Holdings, Walt Disney, Constellation Brands, Citigroup, and Apple. The host of the show, Simon Hamilton, owns shares of Citigroup, Apple, Constellation Brands, Walt Disney, Generac, and Laboratory Corporation of America in his personal accounts. Thank you. Listeners should consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of any mutual fund or ETF discussed on the show carefully before investing. This and other information can be found in the prospectus. For a prospectus, contact your financial professional, visit the fund manager's website, or call the Wise Investor Group at 866-758-9473. Please read the prospectus carefully before investing.
For years, the Wise Investor Group has provided individuals and families with trusted financial advice, plus the peace of mind that comes from a financial partner who keeps your interests first. We focus on your needs, taking the long-term view, continually reinvesting in our professional credentials and technology to best serve you. And our recognition as a great place to work means our associates often stay their entire career, creating lasting partnerships for our clients and a real investment in our communities.
This broadcast contains the current opinions of the host. The opinions are subject to change. The broadcast is provided for informational purposes only and should not be considered investment advice or recommendations. Investors should obtain professional advice before making investment decisions. All investments are subject to risk. This is not a complete analysis of every material fact regarding any company, industry, or security. The information has been obtained from sources we consider to be reliable but cannot guarantee their accuracy. For more information about the companies discussed, please contact 866-758-9473. This broadcast may not be reproduced without express permission of Baird. Copyright 2021, Robert W. Baird Incorporated. Member SIPC, all rights reserved.